everybody. Get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, where we know who won the election. We've got a great show today. The fabulous Hotel Zena on 14th Street is really half luxury hotel, boutique hotel, and half art gallery. And joining us today will be Natalie Vachon, who's the area director of marketing for the hotel, and Jasmine Diaz. We're going to be talking about their cocktail menu at the Fig Leaf Bar. And we have to talk about some of the incredible artwork there, including the most special version of RBG you've ever seen. Bonnie Moore is executive director and founding board member of Real Food Kids. She's been on the show before, and she's back in to talk about how this group of Fairfax County parents are advocating for increased quantities of fresh whole foods in schools, especially during the COVID crisis. We have eaten at La Famosa down in the Navy Yard, and it is fabulous. It's soulful Puerto Rican food, and chef owner Juan Carlo Parkhurst is going to join us for the show. You'll hear all about it. And talk about food that we've eaten and love. Have you tried Money Muscle Barbecue? It's a food truck concept from the husband and wife team of Ed Rivas and Jennifer Meltzer. They also own All Set in Silver Spring. You're going to hear about that too. Before we get into the show, Nikki's got a couple of updates on Thanksgiving.
Absolutely. So if you got your recent issue of The List or you want it.com or you just want to pop online, you still have time, but it is running thin to get everything you need for your Thanksgiving meal this week. Just go to thelistaryouwantit.com. You'll find an egregiously long list of places that are supplying turkeys, cooked, uncooked, your sides, your pies, whatever you need, because this year, as we all know, Thanksgiving is going to be incredibly different, and you do want to make it as stress-free as possible.
Well, I totally agree, just if somebody makes you read the whole list.
That's
but you'll
true.
Find what you want there. So first, we're going to talk to Debbie Moser
and
Mitch Brook. I know what I'm doing here.
Okay,
I know what I am doing. No, Debbie Moser and Mitch Berliner from Central Farm Markets. Mitch, you guys there?
We are up here now. How are you?
We're good. So what do you got at the markets for people who've been a little late around the curve for Thanksgiving?
We're open on Sunday, as usual, and we have all of our vendors there. And people are starting to pick up turkeys on Sunday and get all their goodies going. There will be specials. There's special prepared foods. Lots of pies going out. And so make sure you stop by each and every vendor because they've all got specials. And then on Tuesday, November 24th, from 10 to 2 p.m. at Pike and Rose, we have a special Thanksgiving market where you can pick up all your turkeys that you may have pre-ordered, pies, sides.
There will be some extra half turkeys. We're pretty low on regular turkeys, but because we're supposed to be doing a small Thanksgiving this year so we can have a large Thanksgiving next year, we have half turkeys for sale from Springfield Farms. So I wanted to tell people there's still a bunch of those. I spoke to the farmer, Catherine Webb, this morning.
Well, let me ask you guys. So if we came to that Tuesday market, it's not just for pre-orders, right? Like it's your normal market just on Tuesday to especially help people be better prepared for Thanksgiving, right?
Yes, it's our regular market. Yes, indeed, there will be lots of pre-orders, but there will be things that people can just come in and buy. We have our produce vendors. You can get apple cider if you haven't gotten that. That's great with local distilleries. We have a local distillery, Twin Valley will be there. So that's a wonderful combination. Our person will be there. So we'll have a complete selection. We'll have over 25 vendors and artisan food producers, farmers, etc.
You guys have tons of prepared foods. So if you're really trying to make things easy for this holiday, you should really do your homework. Go to Central Farm Market's website and see all the different vendors who are going to be there so that you can plan ahead, because we are still in the middle of the pandemic and you can't just sort of, you know, schmy around like you used to at the market. You have to go with intention.
That's true. That is true. And I do want to remind all of our folks, stock up for the weekend too, because all of our markets will be closed Thanksgiving weekend so that our employees and vendors can have time with their families.
The best thing to do is go to centralfarmmarkets.com to see where all three markets are. We have the Bethesda year-round at the Bethesda Elementary School. We have Nova year-round at the Church of the Holy Comforter in Vienna, Virginia. And then through December 19th, we have our Pike and Rose at the REI parking lot. But again, go to centralfarmmarkets.com and you'll get all the information you need.
Okay, great,
thank
guys.
You.
Thank you. Have a good Thanksgiving. Okay, great.
Bye-bye.
All right, so the stunning Hotel Zena on 14th
you
Street.
You haven't even been there, so how do you know it's
I have been
there. You can see the picture.
That is not true. I have been in and been in the door.
To Hotel Zena?
Yeah.
No, you haven't.
Yes, I have.
No. Go ahead.
Why does my wife call me a liar? Because we've been married 24 years. That's why. All right. Anyways, it is. And I also have seen it online. I looked at all the photos, all the everything. And it's gorgeous. And we've got Natalie Vachon with us, who's the area director of marketing. And with her is Jasmine Diaz, who's the assistant food and beverage director and the creator of the Fig Leaf Bar's cocktail menu. We're going to talk cocktails in a minute. But Natalie, you gotta sort of give everybody a verbal walkthrough on this crazy, fabulous hotel.
Okay, sure. So Hotel Zena just opened up a couple of weeks ago. So we're right off of Thomas Circle here next to downtown DC, steps away from the 14th Street corridor. And our hotel celebrates the story of female empowerment through art, design, music, food, beverage. There's over 60 pieces of original art here in our hotel. And one of the most famous pieces is actually right behind me. It is our mural of the late Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Can you tell us a little bit about the commitment to the art program there? Because not every hotel has a massive art program. What's behind that?
We really wanted to make sure that when you are walking into this property, you're immersed in this very visual language that tells the story, not just from a domestic, not from just a local point of view, but really from an international point of view. So it was important for us to collect a team of artists, not only from DC, but from all over the world, to help tell the story of these famous historical and modern figures who have helped bring forth the story and the struggle of gender equality.
And why is that the focus? Like, who's behind the hotel that this was such an important story to tell?
Sure. So our this is the brainchild of Andrea Sheehan of Dawson Design Associates. And Andrea's been designing hotels for over 30 years. And, you know, she was on a road trip with her daughter in Australia, and they were listening to a story about Ruth Bader Ginsburg on an audio podcast. And she realized that in her career, she had always designed very masculine hotels. When we talk about masculine hotels, you think dark wood, you think the Anne Schrager's of the world, where everything is very dark and moody. And she said to herself, well, if there was a hotel designed by a woman for women, what would that look like? And she started to do some research and realized that it didn't really exist. So when you walk through here, it's very open. It's very light. Everything is very curvier. There's no really hard, sharp edges. But there are still some elements in here that are very fierce. Like, we have a lioness who's made out of screws and who's made out of nails. But we also have it made out of makeup palettes and nail files. So it's a testament to the strength of women, the fluidity, and really just telling this incredible story.
Well, tell everyone what Ruth is made out of.
Yeah, so Ruth, our mural of Ruth Bader Ginsburg is really the star of the show, besides Jasmine's incredible cocktail program, which she'll talk about in a minute. So the mural is made out of 20,000 hand-painted organic tampons. So we worked with a company called Cora to create this mural, and Cora's mission is that for every purchase of a Cora product, a feminine hygiene product is donated in turn to a girl in need. So it was very important for us to work with a partner who really supported the story as much as we did. And because we want to make sure that we're giving back to the community, we've just announced this week. We worked with Architectural Digest to roll this out. a portion of our revenue every month will be donated to End Street Village, which is a local organization that helps empower women through medical services and job training and helps with food insecurity. So we're happy to be here and to support the community as much as possible.
Well, so I have multiple questions, but I love that you're helping to support the community. It's so important for larger organizations, especially when you come to DC, to find ways to be part of the community. But you did open in the middle of COVID and a pandemic, and the travel industry is being decimated. So how are you guys finding your way, given what's happening?
Of course. So we're seeing, I think what a lot of hotels are seeing right now, is most of our business is coming in on the weekends. People who are visiting family, people who want a staycation. And one of the things I always like to reiterate is we are taking this pandemic very seriously. So when you're walking in here, we have social distancing decals on the floor. There's hand sanitizing stations. You will be greeted by somebody who's wearing a mask at all times. Mm-hmm. The elevators are encouraged to have only one family who's traveling together at a time. So I think once people realize the amount of safety that we're taking into concern, they become very comfortable. Because we're in DC, we also see a lot of government-based business here as well. So especially now with the election over,
It's over.
Election's over. We are starting to see some of that pick up as well. So yeah, we're very optimistic about the future.
Well, that's great. Listen, you know what we're going to do? We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to bring in Jasmine and we're going to start seeing her shake up some cocktails from the bar Fig Leaf, which I love the name. I think it's brilliant. This is David and Nikki Nellis, Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast, and joining us now is Jasmine Diaz, who is the Assistant Food and Beverage Director at the Hotel Zena and the creator of the Fig Leaf Bar's cocktail menu. And Jasmine, tell us about the bar and tell us about how you put the menu together.
When I was given the incredible opportunity to make a cocktail program, especially for Fig Leaf and everything that Hotel Zena means for women around the world, I feel, I said to myself, okay, so how can I feature local DC products as well as featuring women in the beverage industry? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I did my research, and then, you know, I also, in the creation of this cocktail menu, I said, you know, I want to make sure that I put a little bit of me in there as well, so people know who I am. So it's not definitely meant to be super serious. I take classic cocktails and put my own spin on them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just have a little cheeky fun. You know, I mean, one of my cocktails, it's called the HBIC, and I love it. And with all my heart, it's made with hibiscus tea and Old Forester bourbon. And it has a beautiful ice cube, in there, and then with citrus as a finish. But my most pride and joy, I'll talk about, in which is actually a neighborhood favorite, it became, is Golden Leaves. Mm-hmm. and La Catrina. So Golden Leaves was actually made with Civic Vodka. And Civic Vodka is from Republic Restoratives. It's women-owned, crowdfunded as well, and it's DC local. So it just hit, you know, the mark on everything that I wanted to represent for our first opening cocktail menu. So again, Civic Vodka, spice simple, and prickly pear, as well as lemon juice. So it's a simple, classic martini style beverage, but I also like to garnish it with a pear that has been dusted in gold as well. Okay. So yeah, and you know, I guess the summarizing ethos behind that cocktail, that was actually a pear martini was one of the first cocktails that I ever learned how to make when I was, you know, just dabbling around, you know, with drinks. So I wanted to say, okay, well, how can I elevate it? And that was the end result. And so it's actually taking off very well. It's just a beautiful cocktail that everybody loves to have when they come.
Gold is increasing in value. So if I come and order 200,000 of those cocktails, maybe I can retire. Who knows?
You know what? You might be able to.
We're going to have to wrap it up. Do us a favor and tell everybody how to find the hotel and how to find you in the bar.
Yes, please.
Sure, absolutely. So as Natalie said before, we are on 14th Street. We're on Thomas Circle as well. But if you want to find us behind the bar or find me behind the bar, I'm here Tuesday through Saturday. So definitely come and check us out. We'd love to have you here. I'd love to talk to you.
Tell us where we can find Fig Leaf and the hotel online, please.
Sure. So hotelzena.com. Mm-hmm. You can definitely just look us up, Google us, honestly, and you'll be able to find us online. And come visit us.
Thank you.
And I have to say, I used to love Xena Warrior Princess. So thank you for naming the whole program.
Thank you so much. Okay, up next, we have Bonnie Moore with Real Food for Kids. So on my other show, Industry Night, I had the pleasure of having Bonnie on this week. The show will actually air on Tuesday. But we did a panel discussion about what Real Food for Kids is doing. And we brought on other board members and chefs to talk about how they're executing it. And Bonnie, I'm so glad you're joining us on the show today, because what Real Food for Kids is doing right now is so important. Can you give us a little background? I mean, we've had you on the show before, but can you give us a little background on Real Food for Kids, like pre-COVID?
Real Food for Kids pre-COVID is pretty much the same. There's been a big pivot, and I'll explain that. We are a nonprofit organization that advocates for more real food choices in school food. And what that also means is less processed food choices in school food. Some things as simple as a hamburger in school food can have over 50 ingredients. It's hard to imagine that there would be more than one or maybe two with the bun, but they can have 50 ingredients. Burritos can have 75 ingredients.
And oh my God.
Ounce and a lot of them. So we'd like to see more things like apples and cucumbers and lettuce and lentils and grains and things like that. Mm-hmm. So we started advocating for more of that, and we were able to work with Fairfax County very successfully to get Real Food for Kids salad bars in 142 of their 180 schools. And that has only been, we hit the pause button with COVID on that, but there is a plan to get a salad bar into all 180 Fairfax County public schools, which is fantastic.
Well, so then when the COVID hit, schools closed, how did you guys redefine your purpose?
Well, we met with David Guas over in Arlington at Bayou Bakery, and he asked us for a meeting and said, look, this isn't going to go down well. I've got staff that is maybe not going to have as much work, and their kids are going to school or they're not going to go to school, and they really depend on that school food. I'm really concerned, how are those kids going to eat? And I know how to cook, and you guys know how to organize, so what can we do? Mm-hmm. And we launched Chefs Feeding Families. We opened the week that schools closed, knowing that any emergency feeding program does not hit everybody who needs food. Mm-hmm. So the schools were quickly pivoting, and they still are heroic in their efforts to feed kids. But it's hard to feed kids that aren't getting a bus to school. They're not going to school. They're at home with parents and guardians that have different schedules and siblings that have competing schedules. So it's hard enough to get to school lunch in the 20-minute lunch period that you have when school's in session, let alone when you've got to walk there or take the bus, take public transportation to get to the meal distribution sites. So we quickly identified with school districts areas where we might be able to lend a hand. And David was our first partner at Bayou Bakery. And since then, we've grown to 7 different partners across the region, from Montgomery County to Fairfax. And we basically partnered with the restaurant industry to feed kids and to bring cooks back to work doing what they are really good at, feeding people and making them happy doing it.
So Fairfax County is very diverse, and you have very well-to-do homes, middle-class homes, and blue-collar homes, and some that are even lower than blue-collar, some that are in real distress now, although all of them could be. The question is about educating the, when you're serving real food to kids, is there an educational, part of this program that goes home to the families so families can understand why it's more important to have a cucumber than a candy bar?
Absolutely. That's a huge part of it. And I call educating the whole community. You can't have a healthy kid 8 hours a day. you got to have a healthy kid 24/7. So yes, it does involve the parents. It involves the school administration. It involves the students. It involves everybody in the whole community. And we have a number of nutrition education programs that start with preschool. We have a great Fresh Food Explorer program that introduces little kids. I call them the Iggly Squigglies at that age because they can't sit still. They're adorable. And we introduce them to produce and hopefully introducing them to vegetables. We have data that has shown that that introduction will increase interest in consumption as they get older and become healthier kids and healthier adults.
Well, also, I think availability is what's so important, right? I mean, if you don't have fresh fruit and vegetables in your house, you're not eating it, right? Like, it's all about access. So, you know, we have children, if I don't have fresh fruits and vegetables in my house, they're going to eat whatever else is around. So access is so key.
It is key. And junk food is sadly really, really.
Well, and junk food is also really, really cheap, right?
Yeah,
so really. That's always part of the problem. So as you were putting together this Chefs Feeding Families initiative, how did you raise the funds for that? And then how did you get more restaurants involved? And like where we are now, things, who knows when school's happening again? So like, how are you going to keep it going?
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be any end in sight. You're right, Nikki. We started thinking that we were going to have to get through spring break and somehow the world was going to come back to some kind of a healthy state. And then we thought we'd have to get through the end of the school year last June. And then we got to get through the summer. And now we're embarking on our biggest challenge to date. And that is to get through this entire academic school year to June 2021. And then we'll start assessing the first of the year where we are then. And it does not seem like the need is going away. Unemployment's on the rise. And we certainly see the lines getting longer at the meal distribution sites. We're able to do this but through individual donations and corporate donations. And we've been pretty successful in raising some funds. We had up to 17 meal distribution sites across the region. The chefs are incredible. I mean, you guys know restaurants are the cornerstone of our communities. And these men and women are so incredibly generous. I mean, even in the face of looking at their own business, maybe not making it, they are jumping on board to help us. And I think it helps them too. Silver Diner, one of our early partners, said, you know, this is brutal. We had to lay off over 1,000 people, which is just so painful. But this has given us a reason to get up in the morning. We're not making any money on it, but they're getting up in the morning, they're going into the kitchen and they're cooking. And at least they're doing something they know how to do. It's cathartic. It feels good for them.
Yep. How does it get delivered?
That's been a pivot too, David, because you don't really get like a good blueprint. I think anybody in the food business, whether it's nonprofit or for-profit, is probably on their 57th different business plan right now as information keeps changing. Right. So we started feeding, when restaurants were shuttered, we were feeding on the restaurant sidewalk, basically. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get out of the way as quickly as we could when it looked like we were reopening and wanted to get their for-profit business back through the front door and not be any obstacle to that. So we have partnered with community groups to get the food right to communities that are in high need, as much as 200% below the poverty level. And yes, in the nation's capital, there are way too many communities like that. So we partnered with some transportation outlets. And now we have a really great group of volunteers that are able to pick up a lot of these meals and get them directly to the distribution sites.
I mean, it's just amazing what so many have been able, like what you guys are doing, but what so many people have been able to do. I mean, obviously restaurants are natural partners. And I feel like, you know, and I said this to you the other day, I feel like the tiniest sliver of silver lining here is that the recognition that in these times of need, restaurants know how to feed people. So putting them together to help feed those who need it is so important. Bonnie, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we have like 2 minutes and I want to talk about Giving Tuesday because it's so important this year. This is David and Nikki Nellis, Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
We are back on Foodie and the Beast. We're talking with Bonnie Moore, who's executive director of Real Food for Kids. And we kind of left off talking or getting ready to talk about Giving Tuesday, which is a big thing coming up on December the 1st, if I'm right.
That's it, David. Giving Tuesday is a global day of giving. And it is a big, big deal for nonprofits. There are many of us out there trying to do good in the community. And that is a day, you know, after Black Friday and after Cyber Monday and Small Business Saturday, that we ask people who are in a position to think about how fortunate they are to think about giving back a meal to people that may not have food on the table, families that don't have food on the table. And we would encourage you to donate at realfoodforkids.org. Excuse me.
Excellent. And I just want to throw out there that on Giving Tuesday, we are the listeryouwanna.com is going to be sending out dedicated e-blasts representing 15 different charities, not to dilute where you're sending your money, but to educate you on where you should be sending your money during this holiday season. Because if you have enough money to spend money on gifts, you have enough money to give to people who need it most.
Absolutely.
So Bonnie, tell everybody please where they can find what you're doing and get involved and help out if they can, whether it's financially or through other avenues.
Absolutely. You can find us at realfoodforkids.org. And we look forward to seeing you on Giving Tuesday. David and Nikki, I can't thank you enough for all of your support. You guys are terrific.
Great. Thank you, Bonnie.
Bye-bye, Bonnie.
Have a safe holiday.
You too.
All right.
Chef Juan Carlos.
Yeah, so we had dinner at a new restaurant in the Navy Yard about 2 weeks ago that was so much fun. And it's La Famosa, and we've got the chef and owner, Juan Carlo Parkhurst, on the phone with us. Hi, Chef. How are you?
Hi, Chef.
Good morning, David. How are you?
So I want to start by saying I went to the restaurant before David and had this massive lunch.
She is so competitive, honestly.
And it was, you know, your food is really different from what's being offered. I mean, listen, DC has an incredibly diverse cuisine offering, but what you're doing at La Famosa is completely different. So let's give everybody a bit of your background and then how you came up with this concept.
Absolutely. So I've been in the restaurant industry a little bit over 20 years. So most of my adult life.
Mm-hmm.
And predominantly worked mainly in the front of the house. But throughout that entire time, starting in college, cooking, and then throughout my career in the management industry, jumping out into the kitchen every once in a while, when I kind of very honestly got burnt out on management. And then being a DC, you know, resident for, I don't know, 15 years now, kind of really started craving that cuisine of home, and just not having real access to it.
Okay, who knows where you're from, though? So what is home?
Oh, so I'm originally from Puerto Rico. I was born in San Jose.
That's an important thing to share, right?
It is. You know, Puerto Rico is, you know, a territory of the United States, and there's many of us in the DMV, many, many Puerto Ricans, and the options were limited. You know, they really were limited. I try to get back home once a year, if not more. And you know, I was laughing with my partner the other day. I was just like, you know, I'm so surprised that it took at least us this long to recognize that there was a need or potentially a desire for it.
But I've got a question. I mean, we had a dinner in San Juan that was really spectacular, but I'm not sure everybody knows what the difference is between Puerto Rican cuisine and cuisine from other islands surrounding it.
Right. Like what, you know, because you're on an island, I don't know if people know what's there and what's important to the cuisine and the history of the cuisine and the offering, and then how you guys reinterpret it and offer it.
I mean, you're spot on, right? So Puerto Rico is an island. We've never been an independent nation, or at least not in recent history. We're a territory of the U.S. Prior to that, we were a colony of Spain. The indigenous people of Puerto Rico are known as Taínos, which are Arawak Indians. But what makes cocina criolla, which is the cuisine of Puerto Rico, so unique is that it's a melting pot of African, Native Indian, and European cuisine, primarily Spanish, but also there is Dutch, Spanish, and French influence in it as well.
Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about what that looks like on your menu, because you're not just a place for lunch or dinner, you're open all day. So you have a beautiful bakery with really fascinating offerings. You don't find them all over the city. You have an incredible coffee program, a breakfast program, a lunch program, a dinner program. So what can people find at these different services?
I think you're right. You know, we're not schizophrenic in that sense, but we do offer quite a few different things. And the idea behind it was really based on what you find in Puerto Rico, which are these really interesting panaderias. Panaderia just plainly means bakery, but they're not just that, right? They open early, they close late, and they offer all day service. And that was the inspiration for it. So like you said, you know, we partnered with Ceremony Coffee at Annapolis. We try to use as many local vendors and partners. So starting with our breakfast program, we make all our pastries in-house, you know, be it Mallorcas, which are an egg-based sweet bread, our cookies and everything else in our breakfast.
You know, that's my favorite, the swirl, the Mallorca.
Well, yeah.
I could just eat that. It's so yummy because it's not too sweet. It's a sweet bread, but it's not like sugary sweet. It's so yummy.
It's like Puerto Rican challah bread almost, right?
Yes, that's exactly
what I knew. You were closet Jews. I knew it.
There are Jews in Puerto Rico.
There are many Jews in Puerto Rico, and I'm married to one. So, so you know, starting with our coffee and our breakfast program, we just wanted to be accessible and kind of a fun neighborhood place. Obviously, COVID has impacted our ambition of it being kind of a place for people to hang out. And it's been, you know, very well received by the local neighborhood. And then when you transition into our lunch program, you know, the idea being that you can come in, get a composed dish. Even pre-COVID, our idea was to always offer kind of like a hybrid fast fine model that you'd either order from the counter or directly from your table. We'd run out the food to you. And so, you know, bringing in some of those things that are really iconic in Puerto Rican cuisine, but adding my own take on it, like the tripleta, a sandwich that was created in Bayamón, Puerto Rico, which is our three meat sandwich, the Dorado sandwich.
Okay, I feel like you just really quickly went over the tripleta because you should explain it. David did not have that.
No, I had mofongo. We're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the iconic mofongo, but tripleta is, in my opinion, it's like
so good.
A Puerto Rican equivalent of like a cheesesteak, right? It's it's made with bisté, so marinated steak. We have pernil, roasted pork, deli ham, little potato sticks. It's all griddled. It's not an easy sandwich to eat. But yeah, it's just like, to me, it's just like
screams. I feel like you should have to work to eat that sandwich. I'm okay with working on it.
It sounds like a Puerto Rican Dagwood is what it sounds like.
Yeah, you know, and it's in Puerto Rico, it's like a sandwich of an obrero being a working person. And it's what you would pick up, you know, at like either a food truck or would be, you know, at a job site available for you. Hmm. So it's really got a very humble origin.
So now with dinner, so were you always planning the fast casual kind of service at dinner too, or was that only going to be for lunch and breakfast?
No, actually, that was really kind of our goal for the entire concept to be kind of that fast fine. We did a lot of R&D. We went out to the West Coast. It's something that you really find quite a bit, especially in San Francisco. And to be quite honest, it's been a little bit of a struggle, right? I think that people want to be waited on and people really want a connection with restaurants now. So it's really kind of made us rethink our model. So in the evenings, yeah, our service is a little bit more composed. And when we get to open our bar again, that'll be an area where you can get full service. But yeah, our goal was always to be kind of a counter service model, very similar again to the panaderias that you would find in Puerto Rico.
Well, I think just because your menu is there's so much on there that people want to try. The only thing I would say as a diner is that if I'm ordering all this stuff, you know, through your app, it just, there's no way to course it. So I think that, and I hear that from people because of COVID, we're all ordering, you know, we're using the QSRs, we're not ordering with the person, we're ordering online. But there's nobody to say, I don't want it all on my table at once.
So people are actually, you know, they've figured out quite a few hacks on getting it out, right?
And okay.
Any memo field that you make available to people, they will take advantage of. So more and more people are, you know, putting in their orders and verbally, you know, written form, requesting kind of a coursing. Mm. And within reason, we do our best to accommodate everyone and anyone. You're right. You know, technology is allowing us to survive during COVID, and it's allowing us to be responsible in terms of safety for our staff and for the guests. Uh-huh. But there are some limitations. You know, we haven't figured out yet a way to be able to keep open tabs so that you would be able to order with an open check sequence. Right. And hopefully that comes down. That's definitely something that's in development with at least our partner that we use, which is BBOT. Uh-huh. You're right. That is it is a hindrance. And I really don't have an answer for it.
Scheme of things, it's not the biggest hindrance, right? Like everybody, like you guys were very fortunate that you were already planning on this model, and now you have no choice, you have to use the model.
Unless you're a glutton, I don't mind the table being full of good stuff.
I do.
We got the bistec, how do you say it, encebollado?
Bistec encebollado, yes sir.
And it came with the mofongo, and I was shoving steak and plantain in my mouth. It was great. I had no problem with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think what makes our food, you know, especially in my culture so fun, that it, at least for me, it's really kind of focused around sharing and it should be kind of consumed in that manner. And so, you know, if you come in, a lot of our dishes are definitely shareable. And like you said, David, I think that's good for people to think of it in that way, you know, get a few things, you know, we'll drop them on the table and we'll do our best to accommodate you in a coursing scenario. But yeah, I mean, it should all work together.
And let's talk a little bit about the cocktail program. I know you can't sit in the bar, which is gorgeous, and you have the swings, which also, like, you can't, unfortunately, you can't enjoy the space the way it's set up to be enjoyed, but you do have a fabulous outdoor area and in the Navy Yard, so you have a little bit of a view. But talk about the cocktail program a little bit.
So our cocktail program, again, is really focused, again, trying to reinterpret or inspire people to feel like they're not here, right? Not in D.C. proper. And so our build, our design, and our cocktail program really are meant to transport you to the island. And you should feel like you're on vacation, as cheesy as it sounds. You know, it's a very fun, vibrant environment. And we try to use fresh fruit, different pulps, you know, everything from tamarind to baracha, which is passion fruit, guava, you know, mangoes, pineapples. So we're very rum heavy. We also do quite a bit with pitorro. Pitorro is like a Puerto Rican moonshine, very similar to rum. And, you know, we didn't want to kind of follow that tiki trend that's been going on for a while. But tropical drinks, you know, in particular in Puerto Rico, they're pretty and they're fun. And, you know, many, many times you know they're frozen.
Just keep the Trader Vic umbrella out of it and you're fine. That's what.
But I think it goes hand in hand with vacation, right? Like you're overindulging on vacation with drinking and fruit juices and things of the nature. And that's also indigenous to Puerto Rico.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Steph, we do have to wrap up. We want to thank you so much for joining us this morning. We do, we really applaud all your efforts opening up during the middle of a pandemic. Can you tell everybody where they can find you, please, both online and physically?
Sure. So eatlafamosa.com. Our Insta handle is eatlafamosa as well. We're on 4th and Tingy. So we're right next to the Navy Yard. We're open breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week.
This is David and Nikki Nellis, Booty and the Beast. Up next, we got some barbecue coming in. We'll be back in just a sec.
Okay, everybody, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and talk about food we've had that we love. Have you tried Money Muscle Barbecue? It's a food truck concept from the husband and wife team of Ed Rivas and Jennifer Meltzer, who also own All Set Restaurant and Bar in downtown Silver Spring. And I don't know where they find energy to have a food truck along with a restaurant, but they do. And they're joining us now. Hi, guys.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm hungry because barbecue happens to be my personal jam. So nice. Jump something through the computer. So let's kind of talk about your backgrounds first and how you got into the food biz, and then we can get into All Set and Money Muscle.
I mean, I started in restaurants at a young age at 15. Went to school actually for exercise physiology and ended up leaving after my junior year going to culinary school. And here I am now. The rest is kind of history.
And is that Money Muscle?
kind of that's kind of the thought behind it. Jen said, well, you like to work out. And there's a money muscle cut on the pork butt. And so it just sort of came together like that.
But you're, but All Set, you guys opened All Set, what, 6 years ago?
6 years in April, yeah.
Wow, and but that concept is completely different. So what was it about, you know, having a real brick and mortar with patio space? I mean, it's a good sized restaurant and it's sort of New England style, right? So what was it about that cuisine? And you were like, no, 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 I wanna expand and do other things. How did you guys come about with that?
Everyone's journey is always so roundabout. Ed and I met at the opening of the Capitol Grill in 2009, and we immediately knew we wanted to open a restaurant. But of course, you need a concept and, you know, an identity. And the summer before we found our space, we were both working in Massachusetts off of the Cape Cod. And that's where my family, my dad's side of the family's from. So I sort of wanted to bring those New England food memories down to my mom's side of the family in this area. When we found our space in Silver Spring, it seemed like a good opportunity to do a seafood-inspired restaurant.
I got to interrupt you. When I first met Nikki, I thought, I'd probably want to marry her. And you met Ed and thought, I'd probably want to open up a restaurant with him.
I mean, we had a lot of things that drew us together. And we eventually got married 3 years ago after. We feel like if we opened a restaurant together, we could.
You might as well. Right, right. Exactly.
You're already in bed together, right? So.
Oh, she's got a dirty mind. Dirty, dirty mind. But anyways.
You know, but then when, so All Set has been chugging along and we've been doing well, but Ed originally being from Southern Virginia really wanted to start doing more of his cooking. And, you know, after I had shoved my family's concept. And I said, as long as we have lobster rolls, oysters, clam chowder, do whatever you want to the menu. And then when the pandemic hit, you know, when you think about takeout, you don't think, fish, you know, it just doesn't work so well. So we thought, what are some passions that Ed has with the barbecue and that comfort food? And that's when we decided to really get going with the barbecue concept.
Well, but you also decided to do it as a truck, right? Was that pre-pandemic or was that because of the pandemic?
I think there was always a desire to have a food truck, but the pandemic literally pushed it because I just was thinking, like, people gonna want me to come to their neighborhoods and bring food to them. So, like, what's the best way to facilitate and have the food be as fresh as possible? Mm-hmm. That truck was like, I found a fabricator in Northern Virginia that could get me a truck in like a month. He knocked it out of the park for our first truck. So.
And so, how did you come up with the kind of? I mean, listen, we've had the barbecue; it's delicious. But how did you come up with the kind of barbecue that you wanted to do? Because, you know, barbecue has lots of traditions and lots of different areas. Some people try to do all of it, right? To be a little bit of every, you know, Louisiana and, you know, North Carolina. And some people just want to be really specific. How did you decide what you wanted to do?
Well, I think it was being from Southern Virginia with that North Carolina influence is right there. And then I'm a Cowboy fan, so I like to go to Texas a lot. And I love the brisket in Texas.
I mean, so, you know, like saying you're a Cowboy fan in this city is like dangerous, right? Okay, just making sure. Okay.
But that kept me in Texas a lot. And that brisket down there is second to none. You don't even talk about brisket in really North Carolina at all. So that's really focused on pork. And I wanted to bring the brisket and the meat style from Texas in this sort of a combination group.
Well, you know, it's really interesting that you say that because honestly, growing up for me, I grew up in the, you know, like Northeast in the New Jersey area. Barbecue was ribs and more like North Carolina style. I didn't even know about brisket until I was like, where has this been all my life? Like brisket for me was like, you know, Passover. Like that was brisket. I didn't know you put it on the, like, I didn't know you could smoke it, you know?
It's been a huge renaissance. I think, you know, Franklin Barbecue really put it on the map in Texas. Mm. But yeah, it's been a huge renaissance in the last, let's say, 5 years, brisket.
Yeah. So now where do you do all your cooking? Because you have to smoke stuff, right? Like you can't just do that anywhere.
Right, that was the big challenge. And we, you know, there's a fabricator in Houston called Pitts and Spitz, and they had come out with this new system called the Meat Locker, which is a huge vertical smoker, but pellet, so I didn't have to like refabricate or redo my kitchen, but I'm already outgrowing that. And so now I'm looking to get a stick burner so I can do like that real wood Texas style barbecue. So
that's
the next step. Yeah.
And I know you guys are doing a big Thanksgiving offering. We are actually, we haven't pulled the plug yet. We're going to order today. But so you're doing smoked turkeys. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? Like for people who are like used to putting their turkey, like it's so different this year. Everything is kind of crazy. So what is a smoked turkey? Like do you put it on a grill? Does it go in that big smoke? Like what is it?
So we're offering it two ways. Some people want the whole turkey, but I prefer to open it up spatchcock style, take the backbone out. It makes it easier to cook. Like it cuts the cook time down in half, and it also makes it much easier to slice.
And brine.
And brine, right. So I need to brine 60 to 70 turkeys. And then if I open them, they're flat and allows me to just drop a bunch of them in there. And yes, they'll go on a flat grilling rack and get smoked for 3 to 4 hours.
That makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. Like I spatchcock chicken, but I've never thought about spatchcocking turkey. Like that's brilliant. That makes so much sense. What about some of your sides and stuff? How are you guys sort of like doing a little bit of New England and a little bit of barbecue? Like how are you incorporating it together in your offerings?
Well, we have the prime rib and oven baked ham and then the turkey options. Everyone, I think, has different family traditions that they just can't do without on Thanksgiving. And we're really just being very traditional with the sides, stuffing, mashed potato.
We're bringing in junior cheesecakes, and that's been a huge, like I've got like 30 orders for those already. So.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, that's huge. But yeah, everything's pretty traditional. We're doing brioche stuffing.
Can I ask about your stuffing? This is a personal question. Are you using your cornbread in the stuffing? Or are you doing
I would have been a nice
I really did like your cornbread, and that's why I'm asking.
We're offering both.
So actually, the cornbread, you get a choice of cornbread or Parker House rolls. So that's where the cornbread is. And then we're doing a brioche stuffing.
So you get both.
A brioche stuffing. Okay. Okay.
But maybe next year we should move to a different baked option and use the cornbread in the stuffing. Yeah. That's a great, thanks, Nikki.
Yeah. You're welcome. You can just call it Nikki's cornbread stuffing and I'll be happy. That's fine. So moving past Thanksgiving, we got the holidays coming. How do people order since it's a truck? Like, are people confused or do people get it? Like, how does that work?
There is some confusion, but you know, Jen came up with the we call it the pit quarter.
We're calling all set at 8630 Fenton Street, the pit crew headquarters, where Ed's doing all of our smoking. And right now, we are doing basically Tuesday through Sunday, 11:30 to 9, all sets operating hours. You can also order the barbecue from the restaurant. And then right now, we've been doing neighborhood drops and going to. Sugarloaf Mountain and Manor Hill have been great. And we've been going and they have just this wonderful, you can be outside, it's distant. So we've been taking the truck out there as we're getting, as we're, you know, really ramping it up. We'd like to find a stationary place that we can keep it in Silver Spring and take it more out on the road. But right now Ed's been just running around like a crazy guy, keeping up with demand from the restaurant. And right. Doing these neighborhood packouts.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing that's really interesting is that while in the last 2 years, really, there's been an explosion of barbecue style offerings now available in the DC market. Because, I mean, really, 5 years ago, I think there was one or two.
But, yeah, that's pretty cool.
You know, Hill Country, Sloppy Mamas, like that's really it. But there's not a lot on the Montgomery County side. Really being offered. So you guys are really bringing something that people want. Listen, I want to thank you both for joining me this morning. And if you could just tell everybody again where they can find All Set, where they can find you online, where they can find you on Instagram so that you can all get your orders in. And what's the deadline for Thanksgiving?
Absolutely. I definitely encourage you to order Thanksgiving now. You could either order it through www.allsetrestaurant.com or at moneymusclebbq.com. We're on social at allsetdtss and at moneymusclebbq. Our pit crew headquarters at All Set Restaurant is right in downtown Silver Spring on Fenton. So you can find us there as well.
And your orders are due today by 3 p.m.
Thank you guys so much. And I want to thank you, our listeners, for joining us today on Foodie and the Beast. Listen, it is Thanksgiving. And I mean, everybody knows it's really different out there. So I beg you all, please, let's do what they ask us to do, wear a mask, sanitize, don't go visit people that you're not in normal contact with, so that next year we can all be with our families for Thanksgiving. So I wish you all health and happiness during the holiday. We won't be here next week, but you know we'll be back the following week because it's holiday insanity, COVID or not. So please have a great, healthy holiday and a delicious week.